think go ahead and mute your phone so that we don't have any feedback. Okay. Good evening.
Good evening.
This is, there are two classes, and I'm adding a little bit more than maybe a third class to help explain the strongest tool we have to remove chaos. So it's going to be discussed over 3 weeks, two or three weeks. And the way I'm going to discuss it is to bring some metaphors and bring some explanations that relate to modern science as well as the Kabbalah from the past and from the Torah. So if it gets confusing, ask questions. If it feels overwhelming, let me know so I will stop and regroup, because it's a very important tool. Let's say the Ana B'Koach together. Ana B'Koach Gedulat Shemincha Tati Tzerua Aleph Bet Gimel Yud Tav Tzadi. The letters of the month of Tevet, the Ayin that created the constellation Gedi, the goat, which is the Capricorn, and the Bet that created the planet Shabtai, the planet Saturn. Together, the Ayin and the Bet have a gematria, a number value of 72, which connects us to the 72 names of God that we discussed last week very briefly. And if you have questions about them, we'll talk about them. Mm-hmm. Kabel rinat amcha sad beinu tacharenu no ra kufreshayan sintet nun. These six letters spell two Hebrew words, kra, which means to tear up, and satan, which is the name of the negative force that gives us free will. Na gibor dorshe yehudcha kevavat shamrem. Nun gimel dalad yud kaf shin. Nun gimel dalad is three letters, has a gematria of 57, which is the same as the Hebrew word zan, which connects us to parnasah, to sustenance. And sustenance is the fulfillment of all desires, any desire. Yud Kaf Shin is a sequence that's a healing sequence that brings us, allows us to take any part of our body that needs healing back to its stem cell state, where it will be cleansed, where it will be healed, where it will be rejuvenated. And then we bring that part of the body back into the body, where it will again do its job as it was created to do, perfectly. Barchem tacharem rachame sitkatcha tamid gamlem betedresh tzaditav shimon. This sequence of letters connects us to the Sefirah of Netzach, which is in its essence of eternal victory, the removal of death. Chasin kadosh biro tucha na'el adata. This sequence of letters connects us to the Sefirah Chod and its essence of appreciation and thankfulness. Yachid ge'e lamcha b'nei zohrei kedushata. Yud gimel lamed hei zayin kuf. This sequence connects us to the Sefirah of Yesod, which which is the sexual organs, but it's also the spine. It's the foundation of the body, the foundation of the world, the foundation. If your foundation is weak, if your foundation is unclear, you need to shore up your foundation. Shavatenu kabel ushma tziakatenu yodea talumot shinkufav sadiyata. The first two letters have a gematria of 400, which represents the four worlds times 10 sephirot within 10 sephirot. The last four letters have the same gematria as the first verse, which is 506, and again connects us to the sephirah, not the sephirah, but it connects us to the energy of the phrase ahavatinam, unconditional love. And we learn from this that this process of completion, the process of perfection, can only be achieved when we inject unconditional love in every step in our process. Now I'm going to be adding an additional item to the Anabakoa procedure. And that is, we say seven verses every day at this point in the Anabakoa. I don't have the printed page to read all of them. But one of them is eight names of God that come from the first letters of the verse that relates to the energy of this year, which is the pause that refreshes. So I'm going to say those seven or eight of those names. Yo he wa he, yo la yo, wa wa wa, yo la yo. Hey, 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 aka, aka, aka. And the eighth verse we say in a whisper. I will say it out loud for the purposes of teaching. Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuto Leolam Va'ed. I'm reading from section 21 of the prologue to the Zohar. L'shem yichud kudsha b'richu ishkin te b'chilu Urchimu u'chilu u'chilu urchimu L'yach galeshem yud he b'val he B'yichuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael Limud Torah mitzvah La'asok Torah mitzvah. Vayhi Noam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu ma'asei yadeinu. Konenei aleinu ma'asei yadeinu. Konenehu. Verse 242. U'tefilin atvan di'ishma kadisha. Inun mamash vi'alda roshech alayit ba'karmel. Elaine Tefillin Diresha Bedalat Roshe Ahia Tefila Shel Yad Tehi Miskena Legabe Ela Ofake Shelimu Ibla Begat Kegavna Tilela. The tefillin are actually the letters of the holy name. Therefore, your head upon you is like the Carmel. Refers to the tefillin of the head. And the hair, literally the dalit, which means poverty of your head, refers to the tefillin of the hand, which is malchut, as she is poor in comparison to above, to Zeranpin. Thus, she achieves perfection as above. Any questions or comments? It's hard to understand that if you're not used to what is a tefillin, and I understand that. But the tefillin is one of the precepts, and you may have seen pictures of it where men are wearing leather box over their head right here and on their left arm. And that tefillin is not easily understood. It's something that God has said, please do this, and religious people do it, but they don't know why they do it. The Kabbalah will explain why, but the real question is, other nations cannot understand how you can do this. There's no logical, rational explanation of it. And the religious people many times will say they do it because God commanded it. But we will learn in other classes where God doesn't command anything. In fact, if you accept God's command, you are actually doing idol worship. You can choose to do what God is recommending. That's not accepting his command.
Like an utterance?
Yes. So do anybody have any questions, either from last week or previous weeks or generally?
I know I need to learn again. This may not have to do with that exactly, the binding by strike.
Everybody needs binding by striking reviews. So
Yes. That's
why I suggested that you come. And so let's start with this discussion. We're all familiar with the multiplex cinemas, where you walk into a movie theater and you walk down this hallway, and off the hallway are different doors. And as you walk, each door is playing a different movie. It might be a Disney movie, it might be a war movie, it might, whatever, it's a different movie. And you're used to maybe 4 of them, 8 of them, 16 of them. But imagine that you're walking down that hallway and there are trillions of doors. Each one is playing a different movie. Each one is explaining. It's the same movie, but it has different options. And the movie is titled My Life or Your Life. All of these trillion doors are leading to different movies, all playing out your life. In some movies you marry this person, in some movies you have 17 kids, in other movies you have 1, some movies you have none, some movies you don't get married. All of these different life events are in those movies, but they're all your life in potential. Which movie do you want to walk into? That's the choice that we make. Which movie do we want to walk into? Well, a normal human being will say, I want to walk into the movie with the least amount of chaos, with the least pain and suffering. But how do you get there? You have to realize that each movie has already been written. It's already been produced. It's up on the screen. When you walk through that door, you just sit and watch your life unfold. You can't change your life in the movie. It's a movie. The director wrote it. The writer wrote it. The director directed it. The producer produced it. And it's playing out. So everything is preordained in that movie, correct? The way I'm describing it. But how do you change something in your life?
Through correction.
But what does that mean? And we will get to that. How do you change that movie?
Because you're so uncomfortable. I mean, it would lead to...
We will explain how to change the movie. But as long as you're in that one room, you just can't change anything. All you can do is experience what happens in your life. If it's chaotic, it's chaotic. If it's a blessing, it's a blessing. Nothing you do changes what it is. As long as you're in that room and watching that movie. Clear?
Is it an acceptance on your part?
Well, let's not go to how do you change it. I will explain how to change it in a minute. I'm changing subjects, but I want to make clear each of those movies is potential, isn't it? We haven't discussed yet how to change the movie, but there is a way to change the movie. As long as you stay in the room, there is no way to change the movie. But it's not thinking inside the box or outside the box. It's, we'll discuss what it is. And the tool is called binding by striking. Now, in the Bible, you've heard of all the different codes in the Bible, correct? You've heard of Bible codes?
Like temples.
The first one that was discovered in the late 90s was they took 50 Jewish sage names
mm-hmm.
and what year they were born and what town they were born in.
Mm-hmm.
This is all the history. And they looked in the equal letter distances. So the first letter of the Bible is the bet. And if there was a name that said Baruch, they would look for a bet and then a resh, a vav, and a kaf that had to be the same number of letters spacing between it. So maybe the next letter was a resh, but the one letter after that wasn't the vav. So they had to say, no, we'll have to go to two letters. And two letters, it's not the resh. So, but they got to what is called the minimum letter distances. And what they discovered was all of these names occur in the Bible. And when they create a matrix of the Bible letter sequences, the sequences of the letters in the Bible, they have a matrix of letters which, when they look at this is the guy's name and his name is in the middle, they find that the year he was born is also on that same matrix. And the town that he was born in was on that same matrix. And they do the probability, and it's an impossible probability, because science essentially says that if something is greater than the probability of something happening that is greater than 10 to the 80th power, then it's impossible. It cannot happen. The old story that a monkey can type the Encyclopedia Britannica eventually doesn't hold out because the probability of that is greater than 10 to the 80th. It's more like 10 to the 200th. With that understanding, everything is coded in the Torah. Your names, your life is coded in the Torah. But not only the movie we're in right now, but all of the potential movies is coded in the Torah. But you have to be able to ask the question. I married a woman named Karen. So her name is going to be close to my name in the Torah. The year I was born is going to be close to my name. How do I find that? There's a program that helps you do that, and it's all these things happen, but it's not that you can project the future, because you have to know what questions to ask. What is the name of the person? Now, we have all, I hope anyway, you've heard of Nostradamus.
In the Enquirer.
In the Enquirer, okay. And you've heard that Nostradamus said that the man from Germany's name was Hister, not Hitler. Why? Because Nostradamus was peering into a future dimension, which is one of those movies for the world. And in that movie, the name was Hister, not Hitler. Now, what's the difference between the two movies? There are some differences. But what those differences are is not important as we start to learn things. But we need to understand that these different movies that play in my life also play in the world's life, because I'm part of the world. And your different movies play in the world's life because you're part of the world. And God has a job. He takes the world that I create and the worlds that you create, and he manages them into a worldview movie that follows natural law. So if I want to think that there's an angel that's going to come and take this book off the table, I've created that movie. I've created that world, and I'm sitting in that movie theater. But it's against natural law. So the angel can't come, which means that movie will never come to be. But if it's within natural law that I have thought it through, it's a possibility. Now, God has to manage all of our different worlds that we've created, all these different movies, and fit them together. And it's a difficult job, of course. Now, we have all read about Adam and Eve, and Adam committed a sin. What was his sin? He ate from the fruit of the tree of knowledge, good and evil. But our sages tell us that he was supposed to do that. He didn't have free choice. But the time that he was supposed to do it was to be on Shabbat, and he was created on Friday, and he ate it at noon on Friday instead of waiting 6 hours for Shabbat. So he was supposed to eat the fruit, but he ate it at the wrong time. And that's what the sin was. But it was in his movie. He wanted the fruit now. He ate it now. Immediate gratification. Sounds like the culture we live in, doesn't it? But let's talk about an alternative world that it was supposed to be if he had waited. You and I have to exist in those alternative worlds. Can't be that Adam would be completed without us being given the opportunity to do our work. So what actually happened? What was the movie that was the best possible outcome? The possible outcome was that they waited. That they waited. And if they had waited, every one of us would have been born for only one lifetime, and we would have completed our work in that one lifetime. Remember on the second class we talked about what is our work? To remove bread of shame. What is our work? To change ourselves, those negative aspects of ourselves. Even perfection has negative aspects that can be changed. The best possible physical world, if Adam had waited, would have been that every human being would have been born with two humanoid lizards as friends, as servants, as helpmates. Those two, one is called the evil inclination and one is called the good inclination. What is a good inclination? What is the idea of inclination? Inclination means it's the potential exists.
No.
Doesn't mean that you will do it, only that the potential for you to do it. One of the movies shows you doing this action, hitting somebody in the head. Another movie shows you not hitting somebody. Those potentials are true, even in this world with the chaos. When Adam ate from the tree of knowledge, good and evil, he injected selfishness into the human being. And that selfishness is the consciousness of these two inclinations.
Okay.
I'm changing the subject a little bit. Where does your thoughts come from? That's where I'm going to go and explain to you. Your thoughts come from outside you. They're not your thoughts. Your brain, and there's a difference between your brain and your mind and your consciousness. Your physical brain is an antenna to pick up thoughts. Where do those thoughts come from? They only come from two sources. They come from the holy force, or they come from a source that isn't holy. Our brain picks up these sources. We think that thought is my own. Why? Because when you are born, I don't know if you've ever heard the statement, it's a verse in Psalms, and it says, sin crouches at the door. It's written by King David. Sin crouches at the door. It's describing this consciousness, this entity, this evil inclination that waits at the entryway, at the outer edge of a woman's vagina for the baby to come out. And as it comes out, that evil inclination enters the child. That's what the Catholics teach as original sin. It's not original sin. It's part of the system. And for 13 years, the only voice a child hears is that evil inclination. What is the evil inclination saying? I want, go get it. I want the toy, push the other kid away. What does a child spend 13 years listening to? This evil inclination. It doesn't mean that the child will do what the evil inclination is saying, but the child is so comfortable hearing this voice in its head, its thought, I want for myself alone.
I want for myself.
And along comes the aging to 13, the bar of bat mitzvah. Yes, I'm talking about ego, but I'm talking about other than ego in the psychological sense. I'm talking about why you do what you do. You have an ego, but is that why you do what you do? That ego can be, I want to do good. I want to share with somebody else. Or that ego can be, I want for myself. These are the inclinations, the proclivity. This is the potential thoughts that you receive. What will you do with those thoughts? Throw them away? Or act upon them. Bye-bye. Throw them away or act upon it. Yes, I'm talking about ego, but not psychological ego. A different aspect. And what it's called is the inclination, the potential. Now, yes, ma'am, I got a belly. I do. I got a belly. The inclinations are feeding you. For 13 years, you've listened to the evil inclination, the selfish inclination. What? But you see 10-year-old children who do sharing actions. They're not sharing actions. Why not? Because the child at 10 years old is looking for approval from their parent. They've been taught to share a toy. They've been taught to hug a friend. They've been taught to play with other people. But they're always looking over their shoulder to see if their parents approve. The teacher approves. There's no true sharing, potentially, until the child gets to be 13. Then at 13, all of a sudden, there's a softer, quieter voice in their head. So now the evil inclination is screaming, go hit that other child, that other teenager. And the good inclination is whispering, don't do that. We need to help them. Stop and help them. Don't hit them. Ask them how you can help them. Which voice will you listen to? Which thought will you receive and act upon? The louder one, the one you've been used to for 13 years, is called, referred to as an old and foolish king. The new one, the good inclination, is thought of as a wise king. But you can't hear him. It's a weak voice. He doesn't try and fight with the evil inclination. It doesn't say, no, you're wrong. It gives you these choices. Which action will you do? Your reactive nature, the movie, is always reaction. The movie is always selfish. But I can stop that reaction. And as soon as I stop the reaction, I move out into the hallway. And depending on how strong my stopping is, how difficult is it to stop my reaction, is how many doorways up the road, up the hallway, do I flow? And I'm now in a new movie. But it's the same movie. You look at it, it looks the same. It's in the same situation. Except it's not the same situation because it's a different movie. And you don't even know that. You don't recognize that. But the method that you use to stop your, to move out of the movie and into another movie is called, binding by striking. Now, it's a paradox. If you bind something, if you bring things together and bind them together with string, can you do that by pushing them away, by striking them? It's a paradox. It doesn't make any logical sense. I love my mother when I'm her age, 1 year old. I love my mother when I'm 3. Do I love my mother when I'm a teenager? My mother doesn't want me to use drugs. My mother doesn't want me to go driving and get drunk with my friends. My mother doesn't want me to do things. My mother wants me to go to school. I don't want to go to school. I don't want to get out of bed. These are all the evil inclination saying, don't get out of bed. go out with your friends and get drunk. So what do we do? Which voice are we listening to? Because when the evil inclination says, go get drunk, the good inclination is saying, don't do that. You be the designated driver. Same action, isn't it? I'm out with my friends. But is it the same action? It's not. Because in one, my consciousness is selfish, and in one, my consciousness is sharing. But it's the same movie. I'm out with my friends. The one where I'm selfish, God forbid, I'm driving drunk, I'm going to end up with a DUI. I'm going to end up with an accident. God forbid, I'm going to kill somebody. The different levels of chaos. But if I'm the designated driver, can I still, God forbid, kill somebody in an accident? The answer is yes. Because last lifetime, in that earlier part of the movie, I killed somebody. And now I'm being given the opportunity to stop on a dime and not have that accident. Binding by striking is a four-step process. Step number one is to stop your reactions. Every thought you get is coming from either the evil inclination or the good inclination. Every situation that you're in is the same, whichever thought you act on. What are you going to do? Which voice will you hear? Which voice will you listen to? And here's what even makes it crazier. If you decide the good inclination, the evil inclination, by their nature, those humanoid snakes, those humanoid, what do you want to call them again? Lizards. Those humanoid animals, their law says if I follow the good inclination, the evil inclination falls into line and supports the good inclination. And the next thought, the next situation, I'm going to be exposed to the good inclination first. And not, it'll be easier for me to do and support the good inclination. But conversely, if I listen to the evil inclination, the next operation, the next opportunity, I'm going to be listening to the evil inclination. But each time I stop the reaction, which is to listen to the evil inclination, I move to a less chaotic, to a more positive life. That is the tool, but it's step one only in the tool. Step two is a process called why did they tell me to do this? Why am I doing this?
Why am I angry?
Why am I upset? Why am I in love? Why am I anything? Whatever the negative thought is or the positive thought is, stop your reaction and you move to a less chaotic movie. But you may not stay there unless you delve into why did the universe, these two entities, send you these thoughts? Why are you being told in this situation, a simple situation, you're going to make a left turn at a red line, at a yellow line? Do you run in front of the person who's going straight just to get you can get by because you've got quick reactions, and you're going to go do that? Or are you going to stop and let them go by? What's your reaction? That's the situation. You're in your car. You're making a left turn. What's your thought? We've all had those thoughts. I can make it. As zoom out. Or, no, stop, let them go by first. What do I do? Stop your reaction.
Patience.
It's more than patience, but initially it's a good description. Stop your reaction. But now you need step two. You need to know, why is the universe put me in this car at this place making a left turn? Why do I want to rush out and beat the system? Why am I running across the street to get ahead of the other car? What is my motivation for that? What am I looking at? Let's delve into my ego. Let that, your reaction is always the need to receive for oneself alone. But that's not a reason to do it. In fact, the third step is to change what you found out in the second step. The second step is to know why you are doing what you're doing. Most of us do not know why we do what we do. We just go through the movie. The writer wrote it. He didn't tell us why I'm doing it, but I can delve into why I'm doing it. And when I do, now I can look at it and change my consciousness. If I want to eat, why do I eat? Because I'm hungry. Is that a selfish or a positive reason? It's neutral. If it's my reaction, it's not neutral, it's selfish. I see an apple and I'm hungry. I reach for the apple. But I can stop reaching for the apple. And I can say the only reason I'm eating the apple is because I need energy to go and share with somebody else. If I don't eat this apple, I'm going to be famished, and I'm going to be hungry, and I'm not going to share with the person.
Well, basically, she's saying no matter how mundane the task is, you need to always be aware while we're doing it. It sort of like trains you.
Binding by striking trains you to be aware of why you do what you do. But we're human beings. We're not yet divine beings. A divine being knows why they're doing what they're doing all the time. Those evil inclination and good inclination within us, they have been around for trillions of years in their lives. They know why they're telling us this is what the thought is for this situation. They know why. We don't. But we can start to ask the question. We can understand why we do what we do. I want to share with my wife. I want her to be happy. Thank you for the meal that you cooked. Or I can say, thank you for the meal that you cooked, because I want her to cook for me another meal just as good tomorrow. What's my consciousness? We've all seen two-year-olds throwing tantrums in the store. And we've all seen parents trying to control those tantrums. Why do they control this? Why do they try and control the tantrums? Embarrassment is selfish. Because the other parents are looking at them saying, what a horrible mother or father. Selfishness. But I know if I don't control this child, the child will grow up to be spoiled and be a horrible human being. And I can't share with my child if it becomes a horrible human being. I can't let that happen. I have that responsibility. This is sharing consciousness. So which is it? Which did you do when you dealt with this two-year-old child? Which is the mother doing it when you're looking at her? Excuse me, the father doing it when you're looking at him? It's consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing but consciousness. But consciousness is not what you think it is, because your consciousness is in your unconscious. Do you know what your unconscious is doing? Do you know why it's doing it?
No.
But when you expand your consciousness, your unconscious becomes a little bit revealed to your conscious. That's what expanding consciousness is. You don't have to take drugs. You have to do binding by striking. You have to know why you do what you do. And the only way you're going to learn that is, one, by being honest with yourself. And it's very difficult to be honest with ourselves, because the truth is that reactive nature is ugly. It's selfish, and there is nothing uglier than selfishness. 4 steps. Step one, stop your reaction.
So someone's irritating you.
Why are they irritating you? The reaction is the irritation. But even the fact that you say it's an irritation is a lie. It's 10 steps down from what did you really feel that started the irritation. You can't even face the real reason. You have to describe it with a word called irritation. What does irritation mean? What does upset mean?
Right.
I can start there, and I'm saying it's okay to start there. But ultimately, why are you doing what you're doing? It's not that you got irritated. That's an effect. What was the cause? What, you saw this event, and you got angry. Why?
Well, something inside you.
It is inside
you. Ideally, nothing should be able to break you through. So if something does, it should move inside and see what it does. So.
But when you look inside, your first question is, why am I doing what I'm doing? Evil inclination, why are you telling me to do this? And the answer from the evil inclination is a lie. I'm telling you to get angry because this person is less than you. They're really not human. They shouldn't be in your world, but they are, and it's not fair. You think I'm making up these thoughts?
Can you excuse yourself from it?
From the reason why you're doing what you're doing?
Can you excuse yourself from...
That's what every person says.
Yeah.
I'm human. That's my reason. I made a mistake. That's my reason. Does God make mistakes?
No.
You want to be like God?
Yes.
Then how can you say, I'm human, I made a mistake? You can say, I made a mistake, and I will do better next time. But why would you do different next time? I'm going to tell you a story that starts to talk about tikkun. Tikkun means correction. You are in this world to make correction. By when you make corrections, you fix the world. You fix yourself, and you remove bread of shame. Remember the reason this world was existing.
What is bread of shame? Do you understand what bread of shame is? I'm just...
Bread of shame means the more I eat, the more I receive goodness from God, the worse I feel, because I haven't earned it. The most number of suicides are children of psychiatrists. Why? because the psychiatrist is a wealthy family. They're upper middle class at the minimum. The child was born into that environment. Did he earn it? Does he feel that he earned it? There's a servant who's going to help them do their homework. There's a servant that's going to help them do the chores. They're never expected to do anything. We love you. We don't want your life to be like our lives. We want your life to be better. And better means what? In their world, it means I'm busy doing what I need to do, what I want to do, my selfishness, because I learned all this wonderful stuff, and I'm helping all these people, but I don't pay attention to my children until the children cry out for help through suicide, God forbid. The story I'm going to tell you is a true story. My teacher was playing tennis with his wife. And if you've been in tennis courts, there's a gate on one side, but not necessarily on the other side. The ball got hit over the fence on the side where there is no gate. And it's in a park. There's a path where somebody's walking by. Please throw the ball back. Simple task. The first time the guy said, "Why should I?" Walked on. So my teacher had to walk around and get the ball. Another time, a different person, but maybe it's a different lifetime and it's the same soul. The ball gets hit over. Please throw the ball back. "I'm sorry, I can't. I'm at a very important business meeting." Walks on. Yes. Yes. Tickle, tickle. I got the belly. Who's got the belly? The next time, maybe it's another lifetime, maybe it's another day, maybe it's the same day. Ball goes over the fence. The guy says, "I've got this important business meeting. I don't have the time to do this, but I'm going to stop and go against my reaction and throw the ball back." The boy, the person who throws the ball back, never has this experience again. The ones who walked on by will constantly be exposed to people asking them for these simple tasks. This is the nature. This is binding by striking. You have to go against your nature. What is your nature? Your nature is selfish. Stopping that, asking, "Why am I responding this way?" And then you have the opportunity. And I'm using a metaphor of the scale in the market. You can put a head of lettuce on the scale and you see it's 2 pounds or it's 3 pounds or it's a half a pound. But now let's forget pounds and talk about 100% sharing on one end, 0% sharing on the other end. Your reaction is 0% sharing. But if you change the consciousness, using the example of the child being disciplined over the tantrum, "I know I have to train this child to be a good person. I'm up to 75%, because I'm still looking around, who's looking at me, judging me." You can't let go of that. We are desires to receive. We were created this way. We have to appreciate that, understand that. But I can get close to that 100% sharing. But if I lie to myself, I'm sharing. But underneath and in the unconscious, I'm really doing it for myself. Donald Trump is running for president. Donald Trump is a very sharing guy. He tells us so. Is he at 0% or at 100% sharing? You don't really know because you don't know his thoughts. You don't know his unconscious. But you can learn your own. That's what binding by striking is. That's what the four steps are all about. And we've only talked about two of them. And we really haven't even talked about the two as we've gone forward.
What happens if you originally have this position of sharing, and as you get older, this cynicism that comes about it because it gets you into chaos?
You never had an an attitude of sharing. You were always doing it for yourself. I'll use as an example, and I don't mean to cause pain in this example. I could probably make a better example, but I really can't think of it right now. You and your sister were 5 years old. Your sister wanted the doll, and you wanted to stay out of the yelling.
Yes.
Where was your sharing? Oh, you went and picked it up and gave it to her. Why? To stop the yelling.
Yes.
There was no sharing in that action. There was no sharing in the mother giving a spanking to the child in the tantrum. But the mother who's saying, I'm doing this spanking for your own good, has gone to 25% sharing. There's still 75% looking around at who's looking at her. But over time and over experience, you can get to the point where you're 100% sharing. You've heard me say that I'm not a very sharing guy. You've heard me say that, right? You don't think it's true, but you've heard me say it. Why am I not a sharing guy? Because I teach, because it's the only way I get to keep the light that comes from the Zohar. If I don't teach you these tools, I can't keep what I learned. Am I sharing? Absolutely not. I want for myself. But I know that the only way I can keep for myself is to share it. It's a paradox, just like binding by striking. Now, I've given you the beginning of the tool. Next Thursday, next Thursday is Christmas, so I don't know.
I mean, are you going to have it?
If you want, I will have it, because I don't keep it. But if you... So let's skip next week, and we'll do it the week after, which again is New Year's Eve. So we'll skip 2 weeks.
Okay.
We'll skip 2 weeks, and then I'll explain it again. You can look on the website. You can look ahead to class number 5. Read the handout. Class number 5 and now class number 6. I'm going to explain it in more detail, more exactness, but ultimately, binding by striking is a paradox that stops your reaction, which brings you into the choice of which movie are you going to go in. It's not that you're choosing the movie, it's the universe is recognizing how difficult is it for me to say no to chocolate cake when I don't like chocolate cake. My reaction to chocolate cake is no, I don't like it. So I don't eat it. Or my reaction can be, I don't want the chocolate cake, but I'm going to say, yeah, I'll have a small piece because it gives the hostess who's bake the chocolate cake a good feeling to see me eat it. And I can tell you exactly how that feels, because my mother never cooked meat that wasn't burned. I was 22 years old before I had medium-rare meat. My mother was not a good cook. She would bake this meat, and I didn't want it. But as I got older, and as she got closer to her passing, she would bake an apple pie. She would bake some meat, and I'd go over there to visit her. Please, you know, she'd feed me. Nothing that I wanted, but everything I ate was because it gave her pleasure to see it.
Is that similar to having someone stop crying, like tantrum?
Yes, it's very similar. It's always about stopping your reaction and understanding why you react the way you did, and then changing the consciousness. And the fourth step is to do an action. It may be exactly the same action you were planning to do in your reaction. I'm going to speed up and turn left. I'm going to give the child a smack on the behind. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Maybe I'm going to speed up and give the child the smack on the behind. That's my reaction. Another example is I'm in a work environment, and I have a boss who likes to yell, and I don't like to hear yelling. And the boss comes in to start to yell at me for something that I did that somebody else did. What's my reaction? Some people's reaction is to fall under the desk, to hide. Some people's reaction is to stand up and yell back. Some people's reaction is to listen quietly. Each reaction is relative to that soul. And that's why it's not a simple answer. You have to look into yourself. I want to crawl under the desk. Why? Because I'm afraid. Because I don't like yelling. Well, that's not an answer it's an initial answer. Remember I said that the evil inclination is going to give you a lie as the initial answer? Why do you want to go under the desk? Because I'm afraid. What are you afraid of? You delve deeper with each question. You delve deeper with each question until you know yourself. Why did I want to crawl under the desk? My mother once said to me, after an incident with my sisters, she said that anytime your wife wants something, all she'll have to do is raise her voice, and you'll give her anything you want. She wants. At the time, I didn't understand it, but as I went through my life, I came to understand, why did I want to not hear yelling? What was I afraid of?
I don't want to hear you.
Everybody is different.
What did you feel about?
That's an answer that is a lie. It doesn't give you an answer.
Right.
I want to feel bad. It's like my teenage daughter, who's now 42, who says the same thing today. They don't like me. What do you mean they don't like you? Well, they did X, Y, Z. They did this and this and this. What is that? What they did, that doesn't mean they don't like you. They don't like me. Sweeping generalization that doesn't tell you why you do what you do. But it's an answer that you can be satisfied with for now. But as you delve into this tool, as you use this tool, you'll find that it will come a time when you can't answer that way. Initially you can, and that's okay. But you will come to a point where that will no longer satisfy you. Tonight at dinner, there's a man who was raised in a religious Orthodox family. And when he was a teenager, he started to ask deeper questions. Why does the Torah say X, Y, Z? As he says it, my father said, because it's written. That answer satisfied his father, but it didn't satisfy him. Now he's 80 years old, and he will come to a class one day, Bezrat Hashem, and he will ask that question, why does the Torah say it this way? And the answer won't be because it's written. It will start at that level. That's what the religious community says, because it's written. Because God commands it. No, God doesn't command it. We delve deeper. We get into a deeper understanding. But the ultimate is, why do you do what you do? Not because the Torah says so. Why do you do it? What are your base emotions? And we learn that there are six base emotions. Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, and Malchut. Well, Malchut isn't an emotion. It's the action based on the emotions. But why do you do what you do? Why did you take drugs when you were a teenager? Because you needed to separate from your parents, because you're not your parents. You loved your parents, but you needed to be separate from your parents. I'm speaking to a mother and a son. I'm speaking to a daughter. It's the same issue. Yes, you were separating from your parents, but at the time you didn't know that was the reason you were doing it. Then some shrink came along and said, well, this is the pattern. All kids that need to separate. Not all kids need to separate. I can tell you kids that want to be close to their parents because they're afraid to go out in the world. That's not good, correct. But it is what that child is at, where they are spiritually. And every person is at a different level spiritually. And only that person, each person, can determine for themselves why they do what they do. Enough for tonight. If you have questions, I'll be happy to answer them. And I know you have questions, but you may not be able to verbalize what they are. Or you may.
The evil inclination.
Yes.
More questions about that. Does it have anything to do with balancing out the, I guess, the chesed, the sharing?
Yes.
Is it with the giver, or are you talking about something else?
I'm talking about something else, and yet I'm talking about that as well. The evil inclination is what you listen to. It's the thought that says, go hit that person in the head. I'm saying it's an evil inclination. At the same moment, the good inclination is whispering, go give them a kiss. I haven't described what the person did to you, have I? Can both thoughts be correct? Yes. Your reaction might be to hit them in the head. The example that we use is simply, you're crossing the street and somebody's coming the other way. And they stop you in the middle of the street and they hand you 10 $100 bills. Is your reaction to hit them in the head? If the person is your 15-year-old child, you'll hit them in the head. What do you mean you're giving me this money? What did I do for it? You have to teach them the lesson. But if it's somebody you don't know, tomorrow when you walk across the street, the person stops you in the middle and slaps you in the face. your reaction in both cases is selfish. Your reaction to the $1,000 bills was happiness and joy. I'm special. Your reaction to the person hitting you in the face, slapping you in the face, is, why did you do that? Your reaction is to slap them back. Always stop your reaction. And then begin to understand, why are you reacting the way you are?
Your consciousness shouldn't change whether they give you the $100 bill or something.
Your reaction should be the same. Equanimity is the term in Buddhism and also in Judaism. Your reaction should be the same. Guy hands you $100 bills. Thank you. What's next? Guy slaps you in the face. Thank you. What's next? Where did they come from? Who sent them? They're angels from the Creator. Who's giving you a test? You think you're so special? I'll slap you in the face. You think you're not important and you don't deserve it? I'll give you the $1,000 bills. They're all tests. Everything in life is a test. Every person you meet, you have a tikkun with, a correction with. What are you going to do with that?
Remember, when you shared with me how you were annoyed to some extent with a gentleman who was at Shabbat dinner and
It was even this past Shabbat. I was not annoyed or upset.
Sure.
I was hateful.
Okay.
I know my emotions.
Okay.
I was hateful.
Same thing happened.
The guy was bothering my Shabbat.
Okay.
I'm a religious guy. I'm a spiritual guy. I want my Shabbat to be calm.
I know.
And this guy is giving me thoughts and interrupting my prayers.
And he's political and he's going on and on.
And so what was my reaction? Absolute hate.
And Selma comes along and says,
you did wrong.
No. She says, what's annoyed? Why are you annoyed?
Correct.
How can we not be annoyed, though?
As a reaction, you will always be annoyed.
Yes.
But what you do with that is different.
That's what happens.
You don't have to act on the annoyance. The annoyance says, shut up.
Yes. It happened to me the next night.
What did I do? I said, thank you. I didn't say it out loud, but I said, thank you for giving me this opportunity to learn patience and to learn love of somebody I hate.
Yeah. The next night it happened to me, and I didn't get a chance to share it to you. There was the menorah lighting on Sunday night.
Right.
And we were all going. And it was great. And Jennifer said to me, be down in the lobby, ready to go. Josh and Jordan and Brian, who's a roommate there, we'll pick you up. Well, I'm sitting in the lobby. It's 4:30. I'm ready. And, I could see the time going on, and I was kind of meditating, reading the Jewish Times, sitting by myself. Alex was sitting in the reception area. It was quiet. Who comes along?
Stuart.
How did you know that?
Psychic. That's a lie. It's obvious, Sue, because you've had the tikkun with Stuart from day one.
Well, I didn't ask him to sit down, right?
Have you ever asked him to do anything?
Never.
Would you think he would be aware of anything that you asked him to do?
No.
He's going to roll over you.
He's going to... Down.
His behavior pattern is he's the most important person in the world.
Yes, I guess I have. And here was some peace and quiet. And
he changed it.
Changed the whole
thing. What he gave you was an opportunity to be in peace and quiet and peaceful at the moment when there's chaos around you. That's what you have to realize.
He was causing the chaos around me.
Excuse me. You created him.
Oh.
I didn't have
you it. Caused him to walk towards you.
Brought that into the next.
And you were given an opportunity to be peaceful as he is giving you chaos. You don't have to accept his chaos.
You know what annoyed me that I used the word hated? He starts saying, Hashem.
He's talking about his Hashem, which is different
than
your Hashem.
The man from Nazareth.
No, he's talking about Hashem that is different than your Hashem.
Correctly.
It's easy for me to describe it. I'm not the one experiencing it. But that Friday night, who was doing it? Who was talking about it? Are there any other questions on the conference call?
No.
Well, hold on a second.
Hi, Hannah. We're just here relating to the conversation.
Have a beautiful evening. We're going
Thank
to be,
you, you too.
We will probably have next Thursday, the next two Thursdays, I'll have more Zohar sessions, mini Zohar classes. But
okay.
if people have things to do, I understand. And then I won't have them because there'll be nobody on the call. But we'll be picking this up in 2 weeks.
Okay. I've been away, so I was kind of thrown off. I was like, wait a minute, maybe it's not 4:30. What am I calling into? I didn't know. But that's okay. We just stayed on.
This is binding by striking.
Oh.
But it's a different
Okay, we always need that.
I was teaching about the evil inclination and good inclinations, which is helpful to understand binding by striking.
Yes, very good. Thank you, Hanuk.
Do you have
Can
a beautiful
I
evening?
Right.
Say again, Bacchus.
Yes, I came in late. I just lost track of time.
No problem. We'll be sending out the recording, Bizrat Hashem. You all have a beautiful evening. And Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.